Welcome to the Security Sessions podcast, brought to you by Thales and hosted by me, Nera Jones. In this podcast series, we'll be discussing the technologies, people, and processes behind information security and delving into topics like data security, remote access, and digital transformation. We'll be speaking to Thales and industry experts to bring you fresh perspectives on how to navigate the world of cloud security. Today's episode is entitled The Human Element of Cybersecurity. Do we have a skills gap? Over the past few years, the definition of the chief information security officer has changed as business environments have evolved. With digital transformation, cloud and hybrid working taking on an increasingly dominant role in the day-to-day operation of the typical organization, the CISO has a unique and highly valuable role to play. However, we often hear talk of a skills gap and a shortage of IT workers in the security world. Do you think that this is the case? And if so, what can the industry do about it? Today, I have two fantastic guests, Ashwin Kamaraju, VP of Engineering at Thales, and Tom Langford, CISO at DXC Technology. So Tom, have we got a skills gap in the industry?
Yeah, hi Nera. No, we don't. I'm resolutely against all of this talk of there being a skills gap, there being a shortage of skilled security workers, etc., etc. I think what we have fundamentally is an attitude gap when it comes to recruitment and hiring into organisations. And I always like drawing that analogy of, you know, any army around the world, what they don't do is go out to the market and see if they can find, you know, a qualified sniper or a qualified tank driver or a horse rider or whatever. They don't. What they do is they recruit people, they check for aptitudes, and then they will start to encourage and grow and train and support those people into becoming the best that they can be it a sniper or a tank driver or a horse rider or whatever else it is that they need. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, we as security professionals can't go out and occasionally fill certain gaps with, you know, pre-trained people, but really we should be looking far more broadly and far more deeply in within our own organizations at people who are passing, you know, our attitude tests. Do they have an aptitude for security? Are they interested? Are they engaging in it? Rather than just trying to constantly find these triangular pegs to fill these triangular holes all the time.
Absolutely. I totally agree, Tom. And Ashwin, what's your perspective on this?
Yeah, I agree with Tom. I think Tom has put it very well. What we look for is folks with broad attitude, aptitude, and technology skills and communication skills, right? Because it's not just security, it's security of what, right? There's complex technology systems, and people and the talent should be able to connect the dots together. So we also provide an opportunity to people who have the right aptitude and the interest in pursuing a security discipline or competency. And we provide ample internal training to tailor to our needs and how we go about our business. So skills gap is really, you know, an overused term, not very germane.
Absolutely. I totally agree with both of you, Tom and Ashwin. So talking about this perceived skills gap, which is not really there, let's do a bit of finger pointing here. So who's to blame? I mean, what can the industry do about this?
Oh, we are to blame. We should point the finger directly at ourselves. I mean, we're so used to you know, throwing our hiring needs over the wall at, you know, our HR and hiring teams and saying, go find me somebody to fill this gap. rather than actually engaging with the HR teams and telling them what we're looking for and assisting in that process, we just kind of, you know, outsource it. So it's not our problem. And that when something goes wrong, it's because it's not because we've got, you know, problematic leadership or anything like that. It's because HR have hired the wrong person. So I think we really need to be, you know, looking at ourselves far more closely, seeing what we are doing about it. How are we engaging as security professionals? How are we engaging with the communities around us? Are we supporting young people? Are we engaging in community events or sponsoring community events? There's plenty out there that actually encourage people from different, you know, socioeconomic and, you know, maybe even more neurodivergent backgrounds to come and join our companies, because we are going to provide them with a great environment in which they can grow and learn and actually become either, you know, very established cybersecurity professionals or leaders in their own right or whatever. But we are always looking at this such short term. It's always, I need something now, this instant, to fill this particular gap. And I, you know, and I'll wait a year, you know, for that person, that right person to arrive, rather than actually just trying to grow naturally and be constantly looking, you know, far more long term.
Yeah. And I think just broadly, right, if you look at what transpired in the past 3 years, we have definitely a talent shortage. We also have way too many positions open in the industry, in the high tech industry, be it cybersecurity or otherwise. And you know, you sort of correlate that with you know, all the data breaches or ransomware attacks or all the privacy regulations that are coming into play. There's a tendency for the security industry to amplify sort of the talent shortage into a skills gap, and that's not quite right. And I think, as Tom pointed out, we have to have more industry outreach. I think influencing even university curriculums, right? Because I don't think they really teach good practical cybersecurity in universities. It tends to be a little bit more academic and theoretical. I think influencing the curriculum and better preparing our future generation of engineers and security practitioners will help address a lot of these perceived gaps.
Yeah, and let's face it, it's been, you know, for the longest time, and it has changed recently, but for the longest time, it's been an old boys club. You know, I think what was it, it was something like only 1 in 10 cybersecurity professionals were women. I know that's changed, and I think it might be 1 in 6 now, but you know, when I started, even just sort of 15 years ago, it was incredibly male dominated, and there has been, you know, plenty of push to broaden that out, because we're doing ourselves a disservice. We're actually cutting back on the pool of people that we can draw from by being so restrictive and so closed off. So it's in our interests, because we will allow ourselves to actually get a far greater access to a far greater pool of qualified and seriously, you know, high quality people by being far more inclusive about our hiring practices and far more open and flexible and actually practical about it than we have been doing forever.
True.
Right, and what I'm also both hearing you say is that perhaps the security industry has a branding problem. I mean, I personally don't know of any youngsters in my circles going through university that actually are making a deliberate move to the security industry, because it's perceived to be really, really technical. There are so many other skills that the industry needs, such as program management and communication. So, Ashwin, what's your take on that?
I tend to agree. It's security is one element, right? An important element of securing and protecting all of our assets, and it's everybody's responsibility. And what we look for is talent or engineers who have a broad background, right? Because the technology is complex, is changing at warp speed. So we need people who can grasp, adapt to change, communicate, and understand the context of the overall security. I mean, there are many aspects to security, but that has to be implemented with the technology that's at play, right? So the ability to understand all of that and implement a good security posture for the organization and its assets and manage the risk are the important behavioral elements that we look for in people, right? It's not something very canned that comes out of a program. It's not cookie cutter. It's something that you develop, right? And for that, you need to hire the right people with the right aptitude and attitude and an interest and, develop them. That's my perspective.
I would disagree that we might have a branding problem in security, in the security industry. I would absolutely say that we definitely have a branding problem in the industry as a whole. There's no maybe about it. I mean, everything is gears, it's very much a male orientated, white collar role, very much seen, both through media and through, through our sort of events and things like that. I mean, it doesn't, there's the irony isn't lost on me in the fact that, I'll say I'm a middle-aged white man. I don't know what age I am really, but, the middle-aged, short, fat, white, bald man, which, actually, if you do a quick search on LinkedIn for CISO, you'll see about 90% of them are short, fat, middle-aged and bald for a start. So it's not lost on me entirely. And I think, our branding problem is that, you've both hinted at this. It's information security is not just technology. And I think, the accepted term of cybersecurity kind of, zhuzhes it up a little bit. But in reality, there's roles around risk, around disaster recovery, around certification and audit. And there are skills there that are not technology focused that really, really can be brought to bear so effectively. I know, for instance, I did a talk about, auditing and being on, both sides of the table during an audit and how to carry out an interview and things like that. And I was asked afterwards if I'd had police interrogation training, because that was, some of the things I was talking about were clearly, allegedly or apparently were clearly how you elicit information from an unwilling suspect. I know somebody who's, one of their key auditors has actually, has not got a cybersecurity degree. They've got a degree in psychology. Now, if that person can't pick apart your incentives and, where it is that you're trying to, tell the auditor, I don't know who. So this is such a broad, rich seam of roles to be had here in this industry that, again, we do ourselves this disservice of cybersecurity is just technology, and if you don't know technology, you can't get in. We need anybody and everybody.
Tom, I would slightly push back on that comment. I think in all of the aspects of security that you just this route, which is very true, right? You need auditors, you need certification experts, regulators, psychologists. It depends on sort of the role you're playing and the organization you're in. But we live in a world where technology is, the underpinning of what we do today. Everything is changing fast. So I'm not saying you need a PhD in computer science, but you really need to understand technology, whether it's certification or auditing or any of those things. Even if you want to understand what a privacy regulation is, you need to understand about identities and data and how it's stored. And all, what I'm trying to make a point of is that the foundational aspects are very technology driven. Everything else, you know, you build upon it, right? You may not code, you may not be an expert in a certain area of technologies. However, you got to be able to understand it and the context that you must have requires you to understand the technology well.
And while that's true, I do think that technology as a principle is a far easier thing to teach than, say, being able to understand risk is this rather, you know, etheric, esoteric concept, and being able to apply that to real world scenarios, or knowing when somebody is dare I say, trying to lie to you or to mislead you in an audit or things like that. Those kinds of skills are far harder to teach than, say, learning about, you know, box A, box B, and this is what, you know, this is what TCP/IP is, and this is what encryption is, etc. You know, and again, I'm not disagreeing with you per se, but I do think, you know, those core technology concepts are ones that are far easily, or far more easily taught than actually attitude and you know, culture and approach can be.
True, but it also, I don't see that necessarily a requirement in every CISO's organization, right? I don't know. At least you're the CISO, I'm the head of products, but
it depends on how big that CISO's remit is, right? You know, and in theory, it's not just a technology role; it's a business role.
So what does it take to be a CISO in the modern hybrid world then? I mean, how has the role changed over the last few years?
Well, I would say that it's moved away from technology, to be honest with you. I think the CISO role itself, when it first came about, came from the world of technology. In fact, security as a whole came from the world of technology. If you know, you were the IT guy who knew about security, and therefore you can now be the IT security guy. But I think it's broadened out from there now. It's no longer IT security, it's information security. It's far broader and wider than that. And that again is why one of the other sources, in fact, that's normally the secondary and tertiary sources of CISOs, is either consulting or even some finance and legal. So, you know, from that consulting perspective of being able to see the business as a whole, or even from a compliance perspective as a legal framework. But I think it is changed and evolved because, again, the CISO used to report to the CIO. Or even the head of legal, whereas frankly that viewpoint needs to be unfiltered. It needs to be at the same level. It should be at the same level as the COO, the CFO, etc. Because again, a CISO's role is, you know, despite the name, is not to make the business the most secure in the world. Because if they do that, they will cripple the business. The business won't actually be able to compete. Their role is to allow that business to sell more stuff, build more widgets, sell more services, whatever that might be, through the use of security. If they don't understand the business, if they don't really see how risk impacts the business, how legal frameworks impact the business, how people impact the business, how compliance impacts the business, and how security impacts the business, then they're not going to be effective.
I think you nailed it on the head, right? I think definitely the CISO's role has evolved very much along the lines you've described. As more of the digital transformation takes place, a lot of sort of the security is in the shift left paradigm, moving into developers and, you know, new disciplines like DevSecOps and so on. The CISO's has to work with the developers and the development teams and the product teams. And it's all about risk management, managing if you're offering SaaS service for your business to manage the security risk postures, being compliant. Data privacy is a big, emerging regulatory requirement now, being fully aware of that and understanding the risks that come with it, being able to comply. Those are the roles of the modern CISO. And I think it's more a business role and an influencer. And I absolutely agree with if you become too hard on security, then yeah, you do, create a sort of a very rigid organization as opposed to a flexible, agile organization that can execute and move fast, right? So agree with all of the points that you made.
Absolutely. So we've been talking about skills. We've been talking about the evolving role of the CISO. There's one thing we haven't yet touched upon. So if we could do that now, which is in terms of the people themselves that might be interested in the industry, we think perhaps that there is still a lack of minority groups involved in our industry. So how can we use a more diverse recruitment approach to attract, for example, more women or neurodiverse groups and other minority groups? What do you think, Tom?
So yes, and I think we touched on this, a few minutes back. You know, women in security, I think, was absolutely a major issue when I started in the industry around 15 years or so ago. And we've seen a massive sea changes there. You know, with the provisioning and the supporting of community groups and women in security, and I think Ladies That Hack is an organization, Girls Who Code, et cetera, et cetera. And these are all supported by, you know, grassroots organizations, charities, et cetera. And also, to be frank, financially supported by companies like the ones that are on this call today. You know, the big companies with deeper pockets in order, you know, to support those types of organizations. And we need to do that again. We need to engage again at that community level, be that at, you know, community youth projects or conferences such as B-Sides, for instance, Security B-Sides, a community-driven global phenomenon almost that actually runs not-for-profit conferences and encourages first-time speakers, encourages younger people, runs workshops for students and for, you know, for people with limited means. And we need to sort of champion these kinds of causes and championing the people that we want more greatly represented, you know, ethnic minorities, neurodivergent people, etc. We need to actually support that. And really, the easiest way to do that is do a Google search, find out what's going on in your local area or local country even, and put your money where your mouth is. Actually start to either sponsor these things or sponsor and contribute, try and get involved, be that either on a board or something. Perhaps even start some internships, some volunteer roles, some, you know, paid internships, that sort of thing for people who ordinarily wouldn't even get a look in, you know, wouldn't even get their CV past HR. One of the most useful things I saw a company do at an early B-Sides was run CV workshops, actually helping people. I think it was one of the big five at the time that ran it, or big four, though, I don't know, however many there are left of them. And basically saying, this is the sort of CV that we expect that we would, you know, look out for, and this is how you can mold yours to be more attractive, because a lot of these people are not confident in their skills. They've been pushed back a lot of time. They've been told for the longest time that security is not for them or this industry is not for them. We need to be actively engaging and encouraging. And, you know, if we all did a little bit, it would make a massive difference.
Anything to add, Ashwin?
I think Tom captured it all. I think those are all excellent, excellent sort of points. And we all need to do our bit. And also, companies such as Thales and many other large enterprises are now having diversity as an explicit measurable objective. So we're all incented in all of the different functions within the enterprise to make an investment in this area and grow these untapped pool of talent, right? So it's an imperative.
That's great. And we can talk about this for a very long time, but I'm afraid that's all we have time for. But before I let you both go, I will ask each one of you for a very quick one last tip for our listeners, starting with you, Ashwin.
I would say just to recap, right? So the skills gap is really, I think, is a bit of a hype. There is a talent shortage. But we need to be investing more into our own recruitment efforts, look for broad skills. I would still say a bit with a technology bent for most part of what we do. Have a very good internal training program. I mean, I see we have invested a lot in internal training programs and we make it mandatory for everybody, not just security professionals, but for everybody to be aware of the security context and take these courses every year. And we update those courses as the world is evolving. We want to influence university curriculums and have that outreach into the community and be able to recruit talent from universities and community colleges and so on. And more importantly, the role of the CISO is changing as a business influencer and a risk manager.
Thank you, Ashwin. And your one last tip, Tom.
I would say if you're a leader in this industry, put your money where your mouth is. Either quite literally hand over cash to somebody, really try and support an event or a program or a youth community project, an outreach project of some description. Or if you're not in control of the cash, then contribute some time, get involved with these local events, get involved with these community activities, etc. There are plenty of organizations out there that organize the speaking of cybersecurity at schools. You can really start to engage with people early, inspire them to want to join this industry, because it's a great place to be where you can really make a big difference, not just to a company's profits, but to people's lives. You can, by stopping that one social engineering attack against somebody's financial records, you will have changed somebody's life immeasurably. You might not be recognized for it publicly, but the impact you have is phenomenal. And to inspire somebody to want to get engaged with that, wherever they come from, whatever their socioeconomic or ethnic background or neurodivergent background, it doesn't matter. The impact you can have is significant, and we should be inspiring everybody to want to be a part of it.
Thank you, Tom. Well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for. You have been listening to the Thales Security Sessions podcast. Today's episode was entitled The Human Element of Cybersecurity. Do we have a skills gap?
Love this episode of the Thales Security Sessions podcast? Search us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast service to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. Be sure to visit us at cpl.thalesgroup.com to access previous episodes, bringing you insights from industry experts on the latest cloud and data security news and trends. Thank you for listening.